Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN, F-U-N. Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Ethan Sherwood Strauss. I don't know what happened to my voice. It might be the March Madness taking over.
It's sexy, if you don't mind me saying.
You described it just now as Fiona Apple.
Yeah, a little flashback. I'm getting all sorts of nostalgic flashbacks. Last night, in order to try to get to sleep, you know what I was doing? I was looking at episodes of that animated show Dinosaurs, where people were anthropomorphic dinosaurs from the early 90s.
Wait, it wasn't animated. They had costumes, right?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't animated, but it was kind of animated. I don't know how they did it.
It was kind of just like, hey, what if Family Matters was in the stone or in like the prehistoric age? Like, what if Family Matters was just this this dinosaur family? Like, that's all it was.
It was a ridiculous idea for a show. That was the thing. I was trying to I had these memories, these fuzzy memories from being a child, from when I watched it. And I thought, this couldn't be real. I had to imagine that. That show couldn't have been an actual show that existed. And then I checked it out, and it really was. It was just a show which was a sitcom where the idea was that these are dinosaurs who are an American family.
Right. And, I think he was a logger, right? Yeah. The dad was a logger.
Well, I'll tell you why I remembered the show.
I feel like the kid wore, like, a Letterman jacket. I don't think they had sports back then.
Yeah, the kid wore a Letterman jacket. You don't know exactly what sport he plays as a dinosaur.
Oh,
he's also
think...
sort of a hippie kid. That's what I discovered last night. He became a vegetarian, and it was a big deal in the
right.
family.
Do you think Seth MacFarlane stole the idea from Stewie, or the idea of Stewie from the baby on that show?
That just hit me.
I kind of think he did.
Not a very similar look.
Very similar look. They're both kind of dicks. Like,
yeah, you know, the baby in Dinosaurs isn't British, but it's a similar thing. I mean, I'll tell you what really disturbed me about Dinosaurs when I was a kid, and when you watch it again, is that they're just eating other dinosaurs all the time in that show.
Right.
And the other dinosaur is either indifferent to his mortality, and he goes, "Ah, you're gonna eat me." Or he's just shivering and in fear. And when you're a little kid, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, what if Full House was like the exact same show, only they were cannibals?
It's not dissimilar at all. It really, that is exactly what was
like,
happening.
What if when Uncle Joey was saying cut it out, he meant like someone's hindquarters because he was going to he was gonna fry up a steak?
Oh, so horrified. Just picture Full House where they're having their little family... The little family situations, and Uncle Jesse's giving some speech at the end of the show, and he's just casually eating a human being who doesn't want to be eaten.
Yeah, what if they were putting up with Kimmy Gibbler just to fatten her up so they could eat her one day?
I think that it's always so bad to be one of those characters. That she was the Waldo of that show, right?
Yeah, she was the Waldo, Geraldo, Faldo of that show. Or I guess Waldo, Geraldo, Faldo was the Kimmy Gibbler.
Yes.
Family Matters.
Well, it depends on whether or not you're a racist.
Well, no, I think Family Matters came second. So I think it's just a chronological thing, not a race thing.
It's just bad to be one of those characters where you're the comic relief because you're such a weirdo. You almost have to act like a, how would I even explain it? Just a what is that character?
You're the court jester.
Yeah, but you're essentially portraying a mentally ill person, right? But that's not what it is,
right? Or someone with like a learning disability, or so, you know, like Waldo was meant to be like that. There was something wrong with him. I think Kimmy was just a brat, but what like they had Waldo as like someone like he had something wrong with him.
Yeah.
And that everyone just seemed to ignore.
And both shows just had very simple ideas for comedy. One was that Urkel would just knock something over. You knew the setup. When Urkel would walk into a room and there was a house of cards or a collection of bottled chips,
right.
You knew where it was headed, and that would be the big payoff. And in Full House, there wasn't any big payoff, but the whole idea was a little kid says something to an adult, and everybody loses their S, you know?
Hey, speaking of losing your S, March Madness is going on, and we've got news and notes brought to you by Squarespace.com.
Boom.
you don't need to be a hype man yet.
I know. I dropped the gun.
Did you watch? Did you watch any tournament yesterday?
I watched a little bit, but I'll tell you what. I'm more following the tournament through your puns. That's the way I'm
through
following.
My puns. Okay.
Yeah, live puns.
That's mine specifically.
Yours specifically. That's okay. My window into this tournament because I didn't fill out a bracket, so I'm not that invested. And hey, I'll tune in when there's a 7'5", 350-pound center.
Simbular.
Oh yeah. I'll tune in for that. But
I haven't even my pseudo alma mater, San Diego State. I watched like the first, I don't know, it was like 6 minutes of that game, and then I went to bed. And I know what happened, but I gotta finish that game.
Are they ever going to have people who can shoot? Are they always going to be the team that can't shoot but plays rangy defense?
Yeah, shooting is overrated when you can't do it, so you just try to find other ways to win when it's actually quite important.
Yeah,
but I feel like they're like, oh, we don't need shooters, we can get by on athleticism. Unless you get into the NCAA tournament, and then you very much need shooters. That's why I'm not big on this Arizona team doing well in the tournament, and I have very little expertise on this. It's just I think I've seen four or five of their games, and I've watched a bunch of clips of Aaron Gordon. But I'm not huge on them in a tournament format just because that team can't shoot threes. I'll just always take the team that can, like, if you have a decent team that can shoot threes in the tournament, like, I'll take them because that seems to be the thing that breaks through.
Is it okay to not be big on Aaron Gordon as a prospect?
I like him. I just – he reminds me of Blake Griffin without all that pesky basketball skill.
Yeah, and I just – a few things signal alarm bells for me when people are talking about prospects. When somebody was billed as an offensive prospect and then the narrative becomes, but his defense is great, it seems like we're settling and we're rationalizing that he wasn't as good offensively as we thought he would be.
I've definitely never done that with Ricky Rubio.
It's a little different at the NBA level because – hey, you know, at least at the NBA level, we're talking about what he's tangibly doing at the NBA level.
Right.
I think we have less of a handle on what projects to good defense later on.
No, I think, so, I mean, Gordon's going to be like a top six pick. I think he's worthy of a top six pick. I think he'll be good, but I'm having my doubts about whether he'll be a franchise guy. He has this weird thing. The way he moves is really weird to me. Like, it looks like he's bringing his shoulders together and he's hunching over when he moves. Yeah. And I want him to stand tall. I want to be a broad-shouldered fella.
I think that's why he's getting – if you're hunching, you're trying. I think that's what's happening there.
He's already been in a defensive stance in his brief college career more than Kevin Martin ever has in his NBA career.
Well, you know, Kevin Martin has his own kind of stance.
Seriously,
that allows him to just stick to screens perfectly.
Next time you watch a Timberwolves game – I don't think they play again until Sunday – next time you watch a Timberwolves game, just count how many times you see Kevin Martin in a defensive stance. It's the worst drinking game you can imagine. You could drive to a different state after you play that game.
I'd rather play the drinking game of when he gets stuck to screens like a termite trap. I want to play that game. He just looks like a fly in a spider web.
He does kind of look like a fly in the spider web. But yeah, Aaron Gordon, I'm not I like him. I think he's going to be really good, but I'm less on the, oh, he could be a franchise guy. And maybe he can. I don't know. He's still very young.
Not to make Kirilenko comparisons. Look, I just – show me the blocks and show me the steals if that's what's happening. I just find it hard to believe that he is that kind of defender if he's not blocking shots and stealing the ball at that high level in college. And people go, well, that doesn't mean you're playing good defense if you're stealing and blocking shots. It does at the college level. If you're a dominant defensive player, you're racking those up at the college level. So I'm a little bit suspicious of that narrative.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting point. I don't care if guys block shots or get steals in terms of like measuring defense at the NBA level. But yeah, I think you should be doing that at the college level.
Oh,
because you should be such a dominant force. I had somebody yesterday, this is semi-related, just the idea that it would be easy to shoot free throws in this environment is infuriating to me. Mm. Like, like someone was complaining to me, like, how are these guys not 75% free throw shooters? And I don't know. It must have been, I think maybe the Oklahoma game had horrible free throw shooting. I don't really know what game he was referencing, but I know I saw on my timeline, like, people were complaining about free throws. And free throw shooting's easy when you're by yourself. Like, by myself, I'm probably a 95% free throw shooter. Like, those are really easy shots. But you get into a game, you get a little fatigue. I've never played in front of millions of people, but I would imagine that plus the idea that any mistake you have could mean that you're going home from a tournament that you really wanted to play in, that you just spent 4 months preparing for. I just feel like there's pressure, there's physical fatigue, there's mental fatigue. Like, there are things that factor in to where there's a reason there are only so many great free throw shooters in the NBA, let alone the world. And yeah. I just think, like, maybe we should realize that it's a difficult thing.
Well, see, this is tough for me because free throw shooting is one of the few things I do well. So
right, well, but you've never done it in that environment, right?
I mean, maybe this is arrogant, but I feel like my free throws are my free throws. I don't know.
I want you to take this in the spirit in which it's intended.
No, I know. It's just bad improv.
No. Just the spirit within. I don't want you to be offended by what I'm about to say.
Sure.
I don't find you to be as cool headed. Like, I think you're a little. You can be a little too neurotic to be a cool free throw shooter. In that environment.
I shot technical free throws in high school and traveling basketball growing up.
Okay.
And I don't know. I'm not a confident person in general. I'm a neurotic person, but with that, I'm very confident.
Okay.
And
All right, that's fair.
I can't explain it, but I also think that that's an intrinsic quality. And free throws, a lot of if you're good or bad at them, it's just the roll of the dice, and you're not improving them. Most players over the course of a career do not get better at free throw shooting, and you see players practicing free throw shooting all the time.
That's the other thing, is the idea that they don't work on it.
Yeah, so my thinking on it is I have more sympathy, not because they're in front of people and it's scary, and that's a good point, but my sympathy is more that it's just whatever God gives you. You know, he gives you this free throw percentage, this is what it's going to be, and we can't really blame you for the result, I don't think, because the player is rare who vastly improves his free throw shooting over the course of a career. There's Karl Malone,
Tim Duncan,
Chris Webber.
Tim Duncan did it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
He shot like 80% last year.
Yeah. Tim Duncan. But it's rare enough that we notice it, right. And we can count those examples maybe right. On two hands.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I hate the idea of, like, these guys don't work at it. Ooh, I do like the idea, though, that we have a free throw gene. Seems like a weird gene to give humans, but I would be into that.
I like that idea. I really want to know about this because it's mysterious to me. I'm always wondering why is this guy good at this or good at that? I think this about layups, too, where I notice certain guys are bad at layups, and I wonder, can that even be improved? Because it happens in this chaotic, frenetic situation where it's really hard to practice that. It's hard to find the proper conditions to practice that. So when I see somebody like Paul George who's shooting nearly 50% on his layups, I just wonder, how does that happen? Can he even improve that? And why don't we talk about that? Because that's one of the major differences between him and somebody like LeBron or Durant.
Yeah, that's a body control thing, right? Like, body control might be a thing that you can't really improve all that much either. The example that comes to mind is Gerald Wallace, because when he was with the Kings in his first year, like, he was too fast. Like, he didn't know how to slow his, like, he would use his speed to get out in the open floor or to get to the basket quickly, and then he didn't know how to slow down, and it's something he kind of learned over a few years and then got to be, you know, good enough at it to be a semi-effective scorer. But I don't know how many guys actually improve their body control.
Yeah, partially because I've asked Curry how he's gotten better at it. He said something to the effect of, you have to remember that you have time. And so I believe that the panic sets in for certain players where they're worried about the block, and you have to be more in control of the pace and more in control of the situation. If you watch the way Chris Paul plays, for instance, and I don't even mean this about layups, but the way Chris Paul plays, he's playing as if he has all the time in the world. and he is in control of everything.
He's never rushed.
And he has said that. I've seen Chris Paul say that and say that with his advice to younger players, which is that, no, they play at your pace. You don't play at their pace.
Yeah, and that's – I like, speaking of Rubio again, like, I think a lot of that is being worried about getting blocked.
Yes.
Like, I think he has horrible mechanics because he's just trying to get the ball up to the backboard as quickly as possible, which is just not a good strategy.
And that's hard.
It's not a good strategy if you're out of control.
It's just a high adrenaline situation, and can you train yourself? Can you train yourself when you get back in that scary situation? Can you train yourself to do it in a slower, more deliberate way? And I have no idea. Maybe that's the future. Maybe scientifically we can discover ways to teach players how to do that. I definitely see teams and practices with some sort of bag, almost like one of those boxing shields that you punch.
Yeah.
Hitting players in the air as they try to finish through the contact. I see them doing that, but there might be a step beyond that.
Yeah, Bill Baino, who's an assistant now, he's the lead assistant for the Raptors, but he was with the Wolves when Adelman came over up until the season, and he would work with Pekovic and Anthony Randolph actually all the time in the first couple of years, where he would just beat on them in the post as they tried to like score with post moves.
I feel like he would put the Pekovic on his resume, but maybe not the Anthony Randolph.
Yeah, that's probably one where you're just like, you know, I did a little bit of work, but it, you know, that wasn't my main project. My main project was Peck.
Oh man, I called Antetokounmpo the feel-good Randolph last night, and people had on Twitter.
I can't even imagine what happened.
I meant as in a feel-good story where this one will actually work out, but man, people, that's sensitive. Anthony Randolph is a loaded derm.
I still don't understand why people think he's good. I've never watched him and thought, like, I didn't watch him much in college, so I didn't have much to go off of, but all I heard was, oh, this guy's great. And then every time I watched him with the Warriors, even when he was making plays, I was like, that just looks like it happened on accident.
He's fun in transition, and it's exhilarating to see him run the break in the way that they do. It shows you the difference, by the way, between the Bucks and, say, a great team like the Clippers, where the Clippers give Blake Griffin this blessing to push the ball, and the Bucks give the Greek Freak these crazy fast breaks where you have no idea what's going to happen. And so it's exhilarating when it works out.
Right.
And it makes sense, though, Zach. You get it. He's this odd combination of incredible length, and he can handle a little bit, he can pass a little bit, and people start projecting onto that.
Yeah. No, it is a combination of, like, this incredible length. He's athletic. He's got a little bit of a handle, and he's got the worst basketball IQ I've ever seen.
I wouldn't say worst. I'd say Anthony Randolph.
Bottom five. I mean, he made some of the worst decisions, even like when, like, this is, and I just hated the idea of, like, oh, well, Don Nelson screwed him up. No, he just wasn't good. Like, he's Stromile Swift. He's a physical specimen who's, you know, an athletic freak, but he makes horrendous decisions and probably doesn't care all that much.
You know, and it was shocking too, because you'd think a guy who had his name tattooed on himself would have more awareness out there.
Yeah.
You know, I just always wonder about that. Hey,
Shabazz Muhammad has his name on his back. Should I be worried?
Maybe a little bit.
I wonder how. What is the,
like,
what,
the guy
what is,
from Memento?
What is the ratio of guys who have tattoos on their back that become, or have their names on them that become really good players?
Because
Shabazz has Muhammad like all the way across his back, his upper back.
Well, that's a little bit different because there's a religious connotation there, and it's almost like having Jesus or something like that on yourself.
I should ask him, because I honestly don't know, but I wonder how much of that was just, oh, I want my name on my back. I don't know with him that it's religious, but I should ask him before I speak further on the issue, because that's the only fair way. But I do wonder with him, like, if it is a religious thing or if it's just like, oh, I'm always wearing my jersey.
I will say this, David Lee plays fairly aware basketball, and he has his initials tattooed on himself, a little D. Lee, so maybe that's better than going full name. Full name, again, it just makes you seem like the guy from Memento, where you've woken up and looked in the mirror and you're trying to piece back your life back together. Who am I? What's my name? Okay, what am I doing? I'm a basketball player? I'm out here? Don Nelson's yelling at me? What?
Still on the tournament, you're not a fan of Doug McDermott.
As a
which
as
is weird because
player, no.
What's I mean, as a star, I can see it. I can see why you would not be big, but this guy can't be a really good role player.
He could be a role player. I just would not take him in the lottery, and I've seen him going in the lottery in the mock drafts because, and this is a weird conversation. I trust the stats in some respects over my own judgment and my own eye test and other people's eye tests. When it comes to front court players, and that's what McDermott projects to be, small forward or power forward, and some are saying stretch four, if you have a god-awful block rate, you're just not going to be good. It just keeps on happening. It keeps on happening where that's an indication of your athleticism and what you'll be able to do. And, man, his is just – I mean, he had two block shots in a season. I believe in his last 15 games he has one block shot, and he also has very few steals. And so that just projects very poorly at the next level, and that's all it is, really. It's a quick and dirty measure combined with he doesn't have a quick release.
I'm not an expert on his game, but I feel like they're not going to ask him to be Serge Ibaka.
But it's not about that. It's not about that. I looked into it, and the only front court player with his block rate equivalent who had a good NBA career was Steve Novak, who almost he has to be on the court in just specific situations because he's so athletically poor.
But why can't he be Steve Novak?
Do you want to draft Steve Novak in the lottery?
If I know I'm getting here's my deal with drafting in the lottery or even the first round. As long as I get a guy that I can stick in my 7 or 8 man rotation for the next 8 years, I think it's a good pick. I don't think you have to hit home runs. Like, I think you get a guy who's going to stretch the floor, who's going, like, you put him on Orlando. Like, let's say they end up with Dante Exum, and they end up with, and they have Victor Oladipo, and they've got Vucevic and, I don't know, Tobias Harris and Doug McDermott as like their core moving forward. You're spacing the floor for those guys to operate, and I think like I would play him 25 minutes a game to space the floor. Like, I really would. I don't think you need to hide him on defense. Like, I think that, you know, it would be like, he's a good rebounder. So I think that'll translate relatively well to the NBA. I'm not saying he's going to get 10 a game, but I think he could be a guy who, a stretch four, who, I don't know, gets 7-8 a game at his peak. And then he's spacing the floor. Like, you don't need him to be a go-to guy. Nobody's leaving that guy. Like, no decent defensive team is leaving that guy. So then you're essentially playing 4-on-4 in the half court.
Okay, but he has a slow release. That's the other concern. And I just want to be clear, because there are some reputations where you say, hey, he doesn't get a lot of blocks, and the comeback is he won't be blocking shots. It's a measure of applied athleticism. So,
right, but his game isn't athleticism.
I know it's not athleticism, but if you're a poor NCAA athlete, that's trouble in the NBA in many cases. And I can foresee him having an okay career. It's just a matter of, with that block rate and with the slow release, I just don't see you taking that guy in the lottery. That just seems like a bad proposition.
Who is a guy not projecting the lottery that should go over him?
Probably Kyle Anderson.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a problem with guys who are shaped like Boris Diaw.
But if they're putting up good numbers, I mean, hey, this is a measure.
But wait. He is not an athletic guy at all.
But his applied athleticism is better. That's more what I care about. I care about the results. I don't necessarily trust the scouts to tell me this guy is athletic. I just like he's doing athletic things. You know, he's getting steals.
I feel like that the same way we worry about whether Michael Carter Williams is just putting up numbers because they play in a chaotic style, and maybe those numbers don't mean as much. That's kind of the deal with UCLA. Like, not saying Kyle Anderson's going to be bad or anything.
That Jordan Adams is getting all these steals too, and
right. Like, I mean, they play a chaotic style that is meant to force a ton of turnovers. Not saying he his steals are all like just random, but they are kind of random. I do like him as a prospect.
He's not a steal merchant. It's the other things he does where he gets fouled a lot and he passes the ball really well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I would say is that with Kyle Anderson, like, his wingspan's incredible. So if you wanted him because he gets steals, like, I'm not into that. He's also very much a different player than Doug McDermott. I would take McDermott over Anderson.
I would take Anderson.
And I wouldn't really have to think about it. But I think Anderson's going to be like a mid to late first round like steal, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Wow, you would take McDermott over Anderson.
Yeah, I like his shooting too much.
This is what you're seduced by it. Like, man, you are hypnotized by the shooting. I just can't. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just think that's crazy. Again, did you hear me on the block rate? The best case scenario for somebody with that block rate was Steve Novak.
I don't buy the theory.
Block rate's pretty good with the front court players. Guys who can't block shots who become good NBA players. Guys who can't block shots at the college level. It just happens very rarely.
I think that's
Carlos
like when they
Boozer,
say,
and I can't even think of anybody else.
I think that's like when they say, oh, people that play the violin at 5 years old don't get cancer. Like, I think it's coincidental. Like, I don't think that there's a...
What? No, it is not coincidental. That's a crazy thing to say.
No, I don't buy it.
Athleticism. It's been studied over and over again.
Oh, it's been studied over and over. Right. Like, the hot hand had been studied over and over and it didn't exist until now it does. Like,
yeah,
that
was funny. The hot hand has become one of those foods that we're told, actually, it's terrible for you. And then the next year, oh, there's a new study. It's the best thing for you.
Right,
it's
like you can't eat carbohydrates at all. Oh, by the way, I mean, you should have a little bit of carbohydrates in your system. Like,
I mean, but it's real, though. There's a real correlation between getting blocks and getting steals and having the requisite athleticism at the next level, and you just can't ignore it. I mean, it's so rare for front court players in college who are blocking less than a shot per 40 minutes.
I think there's
it almost never happens.
I think there's very little context involved here.
I think the context is the entire is all the drafts that have happened before.
No, I think it's a player by player case.
It is, but then you get into this bad place where you're trusting scouts and you're trusting people to give you these judgments with the quote-unquote eye test.
There we have it.
But I'm saying sometimes the stats are superior to our judgments in this swamp that is the NCAA. This is a good way to eliminate prospects from your lottery. It's just
right, but wasn't
it keeps on proving correct. It keeps on proving correct. I would love to lean on my own judgment because that really allows me to flatter myself that this is my thought on this and this is my wisdom. But I just see this keep playing out again and again, and I can't ignore it.
Right, but wasn't Steph Curry supposed to be not athletic enough to be an NBA player, and he's like pretty good.
He got steals. He got steals at the college level.
Yeah, but he played a horrible conference.
Okay, but he got steals. That's all I'm saying. I need those steals. I need those blocks.
If you're
a guard, I need them steals. If you're a front court player, I need them blocks. And I don't know why I'm saying that.
You've been in the Bay Area too long. You know what I need? I need Squarespace.com.
Wow.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. You can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio.
Boom.
Yeah, I was waiting. You're a little slow on the hype there.
Sorry, let's move it. Let's go. Let's go.
I mean, you should be moving because they're constantly improving their new features, new designs, even better support to make your website the most unique and the best experience that you can possibly create on the internet.
Air horn noise. Sorry, I just, you know, didn't know how to help out with an air horn there. Let's go. Move it.
What's great is the internet skipped a little bit, so you almost sound auto-tuned there to me. So I think that's going to come through nicely.
Let me try to find an air horn noise.
Absolutely. It's incredibly easy to use, but if you need help, Squarespace is there to support you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They have over 100 Squarespace employees in the customer care team, which is based in New York. The office has been named the Care Bear Lair because they just help you and they care that much. Fantastic support. Anytime you need it, whatever you need, they'll take care of you. And it's very inexpensive, only $8 a month to start out, and you get a free domain name. That's if you sign up for a year, which I don't like. You're not going to sign up for 3 months. Like if you're gonna build a website, it takes time to get it going, and not to get it going, but to really build it, build your brand with it. So you're gonna need at least a year. And every design is gonna look great on a mobile device, tablet, iPhone, Samsung phone, one of those cool new Samsung tablets that they're promoting so much on TV right now. Probably isn't gonna work on a Kindle, but get that Samsung tablet or an iPad, and it's gonna work great. It's gonna look great on every device. You can start a free trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, go to squarespace.com/CBS Sports. You're going to use the offer code FUN, that's F-U-N. You're going to get 10% off. You get to show your support for this podcast. And we at the I Am Basketball Podcast thank Squarespace for their support. It's everything you need to create an exceptional website.
That was great. You did a great job with me playing defense against you there.
I did. I wonder how much of that I'm going to have to edit out.
Oh, probably a lot. I feel badly about that one. I totally fell apart, and then there's no way you can hype man after the initial disaster.
No, I had to go ISO there. Our two man game went away.
Yeah, yeah. And whenever if you would have paused, I just would have hype manned with apologies. Sorry to your sponsor. It's me, not him.
Hey, have you seen the best center in the NBA who is NBA starter Gorgui Jang?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Dwight Howard. I have seen him. His hands are interesting. Interesting things happen with his hands.
His hands are totally unreliable while never making mistakes.
Yes.
Which is weird. But as a starter, he's averaging 14 and 14.
It's amazing.
It's only three games, but I feel like it's a sign of things to come.
What thing to come will that be? Pavlovich getting traded?
I don't know. I mean, Hakeem Olajuwon 2.0. I don't know. I don't know what the future holds. I just know he got a ton of blocks in college, so you like him.
Hey, still in the league. I couldn't believe that Jeff Adrian is still in the league. That's really a 30 for 30.
That was a surprise to me as well.
Yeah,
they were here recently. Well. You saw him last night?
I did. I would have thought that there's no way. In 2010, I would have thought there's no way in 2014 that we would be talking about Jeff Adrian. There's just no way. There's no way. And yet he's still in the league. The Bucks are a magical team. But we can keep it Wolves, because that was the more interesting game with them getting blown out the way they did.
Oh, no, it's a horrible matchup against the Rockets.
Don't you find that a lot of people are saying that there's this funny thing with the Rockets where no pundit thinks that they can win it, and they really are in a bad spot with the national pundits and inside the NBA, but nobody wants to play them.
I don't think they can win it, because I think it's really hard to bring a team like that together in 1 year and have them be ready to win a title. Like, I just think they need a little bit of time in a playoff series to figure each other out, and then next year, if they ended up like adding one piece and being the favorite to win it all in the West, like that would not shock me at all.
Yeah, they're a bit of a Potemkin team, it feels like, where they've got
you and your $10 words.
I like it. So Potemkin, for I'm guessing people might know that.
You're gonna explain it.
Well, yeah, it's one of my favorite analogies. It's these Russian villages that they were just like movie sets, and they looked like a village, but there was nothing behind it. And some of the players surrounding Dwight and James Harden, it's a little bit like that, where they're just patching it together, almost like the first year of the Miami Heat, of the Big Three in the Miami Heat. So they've got a little bit of that going on.
A more updated version might be the town scene in Blazing Saddles.
I think we've used that analogy, and that's a better, more modern analogy. But yeah, there's no one word for it. Really,
all the buildings in the stores were all cardboard cutouts of buildings.
I'm saying that Francisco Garcia is doing the French mistake. That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And that Dwight Howard ate too many beans around the campfire.
You're right. Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. How many people that listen to this podcast do you think have seen Blazing Saddles?
Oh, we're old, man. We're old. We're talking about dinosaurs and Blazing Saddles.
You're not that old, though. You're like, you're what, 27?
I turned 28. It's all downhill from here.
When did you turn 28?
At some point.
You don't... You either don't want to...
Let me see, I've got my tattoo. Okay.
You either don't want to give your birthday out, or you don't know it, which is, either way, is fascinating
to
me.
Okay, I got to see my tattoos. Okay, Ethan Strauss. Oh, there's my address. Oh, October 1st. October 1st is when
Oh, so it's been a while. Oh, yeah, okay. I was worried that it was recently, and I had not wish you a happy birthday.
It's okay. I would be fine with that. I would be fine with that anyway.
Birthdays are a weird thing to celebrate.
They are a weird thing to celebrate.
We did nothing.
I don't like making a big thing of me.
That I don't agree with. I think you do, but maybe not in that way.
I don't like that kind of attention.
I do like I like the idea when people talk about how they don't like to get into arguments on Twitter, but all you see is them getting arguments on Twitter.
Yes.
Like, I just think we need to admit that we're on Twitter because we like attention.
Oh, that's a huge thing on Twitter. It's like, all these Kobe fans are crazy and da 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 da. It's, well, you're clearly baiting those people, you know?
And
like this interaction.
For my own narcissism, I recently was just like, I'm kind of a jerk to people on Twitter at times, and I should cut that out. Like, I don't like that about myself. But then I was thinking back about, like, the instances. I was like, I don't know. I feel like I was kind of funny in the way I was a jerk to them. So I'm going to keep doing it because I amuse myself.
I don't know how you do it where you have this rare gift of being likable while being a jerk all the time. Can I buy that from you? Because I am not.
I think I'm going to put that in my Twitter bio. I'm going to put that quote.
People on Twitter, but when I see some of the people that we've worked with and our mutual acquaintances and friends at these functions, it's, oh, Ethan on Twitter, always riling people up. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm never saying anything badly or not really insulting or condescending, maybe occasionally, but you, sir, it's happening left and right and people just like you. What is this gift?
I mean, how do you explain charm?
I guess you can't. I guess you can. You're like the Charles Barkley of Twitter, where you're saying all these things.
It's like the nicest thing anybody's ever said to me.
You're saying these things that other people wouldn't be able to get away with, but there's some sort of cuddly charm that you're conveying that allows you to do it. And I resent you for it, frankly. That's the other tattoo I have. It says resent Zach Harper.
There is a thing I think about. I think if you fire at somebody early in something, it catches them off guard and they don't know what to do. It's a lot like a flashbang in like a Call of Duty video game. You're disoriented, you don't know what to do, so now you're just trying to look for safety, and then you just like accept your surroundings.
Okay, now you've gone too far. See, I was okay complimenting you before, but the idea that you're giving a flashbang to disorient your opponent in an argument, I'm sorry. No.
I gotta say, there was a so. I've not been a first person shooter fan my whole life. Like I used to hate them, but I got into like Call of Duty. This was, I don't know, like I don't know how long ago it was, like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Call of Duty made like their first like modern game, and it looked cool in a commercial. So I bought it. And my friend and I would play it all the time, and so we were on Xbox Live or whatever, and like all these people with these funny names on there would come up. And my favorite one was this guy whose name on Xbox Live was "I flashbanged your mom," and I can't. Anytime I hear the word "flash" or "bang" or "flashbang," I immediately think of that moment. I don't know why I told that story. It has nothing to do with anything. But what were we talking about? Oh, we were talking about how charming I am.
Yes, that was the topic.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how I get away with it either. I expect more people to hate me. And I honestly, they probably do. They're probably just being nice about it.
I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody who has a seething resentment towards you. I'll look into it.
There are plenty of people.
I was trying to find one at the Sloan Conference. I was interviewing people. You know, we built True Hoop TV segments around it, trying to find people who hated Zach, but we just couldn't do it.
You didn't have the material to release the video.
Yeah, we couldn't find it. Next year, hopefully.
It would have been nice if you had released a video of, hey, we couldn't find anybody that hates him.
I know. It would have been nice, but we didn't do it, and I'm sorry. But who knows? These are mysteries. Why does everybody hate Aaron Kraft? I don't know. It just happens. It is what it is. Pheromones.
There is a pheromone. There's a weird thing about guys like Aaron Kraft.
Yes.
It's for some reason he's such a great guy that all announcers love him.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't like guys that announcers love.
Well, that's the dynamic. It's that there's
like Tim Tebow is kind of that way, right? Like I don't buy the whole religious thing of why people don't like he was a really dynamic college player that people, that, you know, announcers loved talking to before games because he would give them great conversations. And I think, like, there's a charm about those guys that, that you can, you know, you kind of, you want to root for them. You want them to be good because they're, they seem like genuinely good guys. And then that translates into the broadcast. And then people almost resent praise of other athletes.
I think you're right about that. With Tebow, there's other things going on where it felt like he might have been hiding things. I'll just put it that way.
Sure, okay, sure.
Well, it's a little weird. It's a little weird where if you're abstinent and going to University of Florida.
Yeah, no, he's hiding a strong throwing
star hand. Quarterback of the football team and you're abstinent. It just seems like maybe yeah, anyway.
But Aaron Kraft, you were saying.
Yes, yes. It just seemed like with Tebow that his beliefs might not be allowing him to be himself in a way that would be accepted and okay. But anyway, with Aaron Kraft, man, college basketball and race, it is fraught with racial dynamics that
are confusing.
And it would seem that in college basketball, a lot of older fans really glom onto players, white players, and bestow all this praise onto them. So then if you're a younger, hipster, chic watcher of college basketball, then you hate that guy. And really, he's just a guy throwing a sphere at a ring. And that's all he is. And he doesn't – it's not his fault.
And he's doing it with an awkward shooting motion. I like hipster chic.
Hipster chic.
I like that a lot.
It's a new store that I'm setting up. we sell a lot of things. We sell backpacks that have your name on it, you know, in cursive, so you don't need a tattoo.
Sure.
You know? Less permanent, you're less affected by it. He has an awful shooting motion, Aaron Kraft does, but then that feeds into a narrative about how he's athletically not so great with grit and gumption and leadership and all.
Oh, he's pretty fast.
Yeah, he's an athletic defender. He's pesky.
He
just can't shoot.
Right, he can't shoot. It looks like he's doing an in-and-out crossover when he shoots.
Yes.
That's what his shooting motion looks like.
I would agree, but we do this thing, too, racially, where if you're white, then your talent is wisdom and guile, and if you're black, your wisdom and guile is talent. So that's what we're doing there. We don't really give him any credit for his athletic attributes. We just say that it's guile and gumption that's allowing him to do whatever he's doing.
Yeah, I like everything about his game other than his shooting.
Yeah,
like he's a good college player. I don't know that he can play at the NBA level. I think he'll get drafted in the second round. He looks like the way he plays, like you could see him being like a backup / third point guard on a team, right?
I don't think he's going to make it in the league, but he could have a rich and fruitful professional career somewhere.
Yeah. That's probably more accurate.
I just think I don't know.
If he could figure out to shoot, I'd love his game, but, yeah. I like the way he plays. I also, I didn't like that Ohio State team, though, for some reason.
You didn't like them because they didn't have Greg Oden. That's why. If they had Greg Oden, you would have loved them.
That is the only time I've liked them.
Yeah. There was an absence of Oden. You just weren't having it.
Yeah. They should get Oden back.
Yeah, that's what he needs right now.
Play some college ball.
What was your issue with them?
I didn't like their style of play. I'm not a huge LaQuinton Ross fan.
It's just a weird thing to say.
It is a weird take to have on sports. I'm not a huge LaQuinton Ross fan. I can't imagine.
Are you a Quinton Ross fan?
Is the LaQuinton Ross? Is it LaQuinton instead of just Quinton because it's the Ohio State?
French advice.
It would make Quinton a female name to put La in front of it, but
it really would.
But Ohio State La Quinton. Maybe if it was La.
I like the idea of being the Quinton Ross. What is Quinton Ross up to these days?
Quinton Ross has got to be a D League coach somewhere, right?
He's got to be. I'm looking him up right now on Wikipedia. Those were some great times in Clipperland when he was at his zenith.
He was a Clipper. I just remember him on the Mavericks.
He played for Boulazac in France. Oh my God! Talk about a callback last season.
Oh yeah, he was on the Clippers. That's where he started. For some reason, I only remember like the four months he spent on the Mavericks.
Yeah, well, that is his Wikipedia photo, so maybe that makes sense. He's in a Mavericks uniform on Wikipedia, but he last season played for Bulazac.
Oh, you may have already seen it on his Wikipedia page, but did you know the last team he played for in the NBA?
I'd have to go back. Which is it? Spoil it for me.
Guess. I just want you to guess the team.
The New Jersey Nets.
Yeah, you looked.
No,
you?
I was looking at it. For Leon, which was always so hard to say because the two names are reversed. Speaking of names, where you pronounced the first name the way you think the last name is supposed to start, and vice versa.
Right.
Yeah, just wreaked havoc. Leon. Oh my god, that's just so tough.
So
I was at a seizure right there.
So you don't like white players, or people don't like white players?
People. That's not really my concern. I just think that that's the dynamic that explains why certain players get hated. The way Duke gets hated. Duke is hateable.
You like Kyle Anderson, you don't like Doug McDermott.
Well, there is something happening there where we do make one white player once a year the folk hero scorer, whether it's Adam Morrison.
Oh, Joe Alexander has no idea what you're talking about.
Is he white?
Joe Alexander? I feel like he was.
I feel like he might have another ethnicity.
Yeah, wasn't he like a quarter Filipino, maybe?
I knew he could speak a Chinese language, maybe Mandarin.
Oh, yeah, maybe he's a quarter Chinese.
Maybe. So maybe that's why he was not. He was not permitted to be the white folk hero of college basketball, which is racist and bad if that happened.
Okay, then I take that back. Luke Jackson is offended.
Yeah, well, maybe. I'm just saying that this does happen where Jimmer Fredette or Adam Morrison.
Okay, but Jimmer was legitimately good in college.
Yes, he was, but then people project all that goodwill and all those positive vibes. I mean, Doug McDermott is really good in college. He's awesome right now.
Yeah, he's historic.
I enjoy watching Doug McDermott right now, but then people take those emotions and try to justify why that player will be great at the next level, and sometimes it doesn't work out.
This Joe Alexander had a tough childhood in a way, moving really? Around all over the place. He was born in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
He moved to Maryland when he was 2,
uh-huh.
And then when he was 8, he moved to China.
Yeah,
so that's why he speaks Chinese. He lived in Hong Kong for 6 months. And then other parts of China for 6 years.
That doesn't sound like a terrible childhood. It just sounds like he's a young James Bond.
You're moving all over the place. You don't get to make friends.
Are you just trying to create a narrative for why he didn't pan out as an NBA player?
Yes.
He didn't trust? He didn't trust?
He couldn't trust the people around him or himself.
He wouldn't learn a playbook. He just thought to himself, I'm just going to get another playbook soon. What's the point?
Right. Oh, he's on your Santa Cruz Warriors. Did you know that?
I did know that. Actually did know that. And people keep asking me if I'm going to go and partake in a game down there, and I keep saying I will. But then I think to myself, why? I know that would be really good evidence of how I'm a hardcore basketball observer, but I'm just not sure what I'm going to learn there. Right. I'm not sure.
He averages 13 points a game and 7 rebounds. In 25 minutes. That's not bad.
He's taking shots from Nedovic. What is he, you know? I love how this subplot, see, here's what I need to write about. It is weird that Klay Thompson's brother and Steph Curry's brother plays for that team.
Well, yeah, Steph Curry's brother just signed with the Cavs, didn't he?
Yeah, but earlier he was
he was on there.
Warriors, and he'll be back there again should he not pan out with the Cavs, just like he'll be back. He was back there after not panning out with the Grizzlies, and that's pretty weird, right? That they just have they're stashing the two brothers, a worse version of the Splash Brothers, in the in their D League affiliate. That's strange.
It is weird.
How do they feel? I mean, that's what I want to know. I mean, is it weird to be Seth?
I thought you meant the organization. How do the players feel?
Yeah, because I just think to myself, there's something very strange about this is the pinnacle of achievement. It has to become your identity that I'm a professional basketball player.
Well,
I've achieved this, but to have a brother who's then better at this thing that you've put so much into, it seems difficult.
Yeah, it's probably difficult. I mean, it's not like they're Chris Smith, right? Like Seth Curry has earned chances in the NBA because he's good enough to be a fringe player.
Well, Michael Thompson might be more near that.
It's Michael Thompson. He's not a good D-League player, but like Seth Curry is a good D-League player.
Yeah, with Curry, he got hurt at Duke. He might have something there. I can see a path for him easier than I can see for Klay Thompson's brother. But right. I just always think that must be tough. It must be even tougher than being Joe Alexander and growing up, to have a brother who's better at you at professional basketball.
Do you feel like this Duke team, because this made me think of Seth Curry on Duke, which made me think of the current Duke team, which is I think the least white Duke team they've had in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this Duke team is universally embraced a lot more than those of the past, or is it still Duke?
No, I think that in our bubble it is, because this goes back to that dynamic where the white players are really praised by the announcers, and old people might like them better for reasons that could be quite unseemly, and we don't really see that world so much. And we don't consider that part of our milieu, whereas we just see the backlash to that happens more among younger people. So maybe in our world, this Duke team is better liked, but not in that world. And I don't know how to quantify it all.
Yeah, no, I think you can't really quantify it, but I think that's an educated guess.
Yes, yeah. But I do find that dynamic to be odd, and it does make me uncomfortable that when you see Deadspin's list of the most annoying college basketball players ever, it's almost exclusively white. And what are we doing there? I don't think that those guys were actually annoying. And it also makes me uncomfortable because these are college students. I don't like the hating of Aaron Kraft. I know that he's maybe 29 years old, but he's still in college. And it just makes me uncomfortable to hate somebody for reasons that probably have little to do with their personality.
Yeah, isn't the guy that sticks around college for 10 years supposed to be the fun guy?
Yeah, he's like Van Wilder college basketball.
He is the Van Wilder college basketball. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen that list yet, so I don't know if I should agree or disagree with it.
Oh, are you scared of Deadspin? Is that you're trying to? Oh, this is why you have the political savvy to be mean on Twitter to the right people. I see what you're doing.
No, I just haven't seen the list. Did it come out today?
No, it was from a while ago.
Then maybe I have seen it.
Yeah.
I thought because Aaron Kraft lost that now they had a list out.
No, but he would definitely be on that list.
I'm excited to watch Duke today, even though they're going up against a Mercer team they should play, or they should destroy. But I have this dream that the Wolves will keep their pick. They'll get Rodney Hood at 13, which he'll probably be off the board by then, but I'm just hoping they get Rodney Hood at 13, and then I can root for him, because I love Rodney Hood.
Why are you such a big Rodney Hood guy? You've been big on this since before.
This guy is a playmaker. He's a good shooter. He's like 6'7", 6'8". He's lefty. He can handle the ball. Like he's just a guy that is going to be really.
You needed to announcer that better. You needed to. Here's a guy. That's a guy that just loves to play the game of basketball. I needed that, to really get me hyped up on it.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Okay. I blame my Fiona Apple voice.
Yeah. I need a here's a guy who's a guy. That's a guy.
Here's a guy who's a lefty. Which is not right-handed.
Not right-handed.
He's a lefty who's not right-handed. He can shoot the ball from deep. I think he's a 40% three-point shooter this year. He can make plays for other teammates. Arguably, at times, he has been as good as Jabari Parker, which nobody likes to admit.
I've enjoyed watching him. Again, I do worry a little bit about the steal rate, but he's got some good other attributes. I don't think that'd be the worst lottery pick, I like him just fine. I mean, I'm a simpleton. I just like watching Jabari Parker. That's what I'm watching.
Yeah, I mean, Jabari's very good.
And I do think that there's this funny dynamic where Jabari Parker has to do so much better statistically than Wiggins to get drafted above Wiggins. But if Wiggins was doing what Parker was doing statistically, and he might soon be just because he's had this run of great games, then he's universally the number one pick. So I find that interesting.
There's this idea that Parker is going to be a four at the NBA level. Do you think that?
I do. I mean, he rebounds well enough, and his block rate is decent. I know that people say it's because he's playing the five a lot, but hey, you still have to block those shots. There are plenty of fives in college basketball who don't. So, and he's got the size. He's pretty much he has the same physical profile and essentially the same, if not better, statistical profile of Carmelo Anthony as a freshman at Syracuse. We just don't notice that so much because he's playing a few fewer minutes, so he doesn't have the counting stats that are up there with Melo's. But it's a very similar season.
God, he's 240.
Yeah.
Or at least Draft Express has him at 240.
Yeah.
I would guess like 220.
He's a load.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
Whereas Draft Express has Andrew Wiggins at 197 pounds, which I don't think he's 197 pounds, but I'd be shocked if he was over 210.
Yeah, that's a weight difference there. And it's one reason to like Parker, because you know my theory on drafting. Fat is potential in disguise, you know?
So Andrew Wiggins is at his potential because he doesn't have an ounce of fat on him.
I wouldn't say that necessarily. I would just say that there is untapped potential with Jabari Parker.
I don't think Jabari Parker's fat, though. I think he's a built guy.
He's built, but he's not exactly... I mean, he's not exactly chiseled. This is going to get weird.
Yeah, he's not chiseled, but he's... I'm just looking at this Draft Express, and he's got, like, a meaty arm. And, he's kind of built like a trucker.
Yeah. Look, I'm not saying he's in bad shape. I'm just saying
he's got that steel worker strength.
It's a little similar to Andre Drummond, and Kevin Love was legitimately fat in college.
You look at a picture of him then and now, like that's 40 pounds ago.
Yeah, but that really unlocked a lot of his potential when he finally lost that weight. He became a much better player. So I like when college basketball players have.
I don't think that's the reason.
Oh, it's the only reason. The only reason he got better, Zach.
Oh my God.
It was a factor. You remember he became a different player when he lost that weight. Come on now.
Well, he became a better player before he lost the weight. The weird thing is he became a better player when they gave him time on the court.
It was a struggle. He really is the rose who grew from concrete with Kurt Rambis coaching that team.
Oh my God. And Randy Whitman as an assistant telling him not to shoot threes.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Oh, really, it was just a conspiracy against him becoming great.
I can't imagine how he's developed this poor viewing of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, fighting for minutes with Al Jefferson, who doesn't compliment Love's game at all. Man. And then Kurt Rambis thinking that he needed to bench Love. Who did he bench? Darko?
Yeah. Honestly, how could you
think about that?
You could play Kevin Love and Al Jefferson together.
Look, here's my argument. Teaming them up is suboptimal, but when you look at the options that that team had...
Right, they weren't going to win games anyway, so why not throw those two together?
Yeah, it was totally crazy. You're stealing minutes from Kevin Love to give them to Darko?
And then there was this literally media-driven story that Love and Jefferson didn't like each other, which just couldn't be further from the truth. Like, those guys love each other, and anyone who's been around the team... Since then, like, you ask them off the record, like, what was the deal there, and they just laugh about it. Like, that's how absurd it was.
Well, they just had to bond over surviving Kurt Rambis's coaching experience. You know, they went through something together.
Yeah, I can't wait until he's coaching the Knicks.
Oh, he had such a blank stare, and the press conferences were so...
And I think he always drank Mountain Dew.
Oh, my God.
Which is a weird thing for a coach to drink.
That's not a good sign. It's a bad sign. That's worse than having your name tattooed on you.
It really is. Do we have anything else? Are we done?
We're
at an hour.
We are at an hour. If we had good sense, we would probably stop. I think we're good. We have different topics. You know, we went tournament heavy. We went draft heavy.
Yeah, tournament's going. Well, yeah, we're good there, right?
Yeah, we were going to talk about the Pacers.
Let's save that for next week.
We'll save it for next week.
Yeah.
The Pacers will still be here.
It's unlikely they get contracted in the next 6 days.
It's unlikely, although things are going pretty badly over there. But still, that would be extreme.
Yeah, that would be extreme. Well, Ethan, we can follow you on Twitter, at Sherwood Strauss, and read you all over the internet. Very, very, very happy to talk to you with my Fiona Apple voice this Friday morning.
It was always a pleasure.
Boom.
Boom.
And it's very inexpensive.
Sorry, that did not work at all.
Oh my God.
I thought it was going to be one of those, like that kind of thing. Sorry, Care Bear Lair.
Care Bear Lair.
This is is a disaster. Unlike Squarespace.com, my hype manning is a disaster.